Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Thank you, Brian Main, for that introduction, and welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Last week, we began looking at an essay that has been posted on LDS.org by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, titled Plural Marriage in Kirtland and Nauvoo. And I have to admit that there is a lot of information that the church has put out in this essay that certainly we would not hear them admit several years ago.
And apologetically, I think this is a great article to have in the back of your minds to let your Latter-day Saint friends know that it's on their website, because it does admit to things that many Latter-day Saints may not know. That is, Joseph Smith was married to more than his wife, Emma.
I know that a lot of people are wondering, well, why is the church doing this? And I can't speak into the heads of the leaders of the LDS Church, but I can look at some of the circumstances surrounding these essays that the church has been putting out over the past several months. But I think it's because they have actually been compelled to do so. They really don't have a choice. They have to come up with some kind of explanation because, in that old proverbial sense, the cat is now out of the bag. Now the things that folks like us at MRM have been saying for decades, and other ministries have been saying for years, decades, is now being admitted by the church to be accurate. Whereas once what we were reporting was considered the angry voice of an anti-Mormon group, now we've actually been vindicated.
Is this a voice of a church that is just trying to come out and be clean? Or is there an ulterior motive to all of this? And I would suggest that the church doesn't do anything unless PR is a part of that. And so to do this, we just have to question why. And I think the internet has hurt them very badly. I think that there's no doubt about that. And with this information going around, probably frustrating a lot of bishops who have their members come to them and ask about this, why not just come clean? And it might be better public relations-wise.
Well, would you say, though, Eric, that one of the best ways to perhaps describe a lot of these essays, including this one, Plural Marriage in Kirtland and Nauvoo, this is another example of the LDS Church engaged in damage control?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know how you can escape that kind of a conclusion. It is damage control, and naturally by the Mormon Church tackling these topics in their own venue, they're allowed to frame the argument whatever way they can. And naturally, they're going to try to admit whatever they have to admit to. And what we've noticed is sometimes that admission comes with some spin. And this is why we are going through these essays. We are trying to cut through the spin to find out what is really going on here. The admissions that are at least in this essay, not even talking about all the many other essays that they've come out with, if I was a Latter-day Saint, this would not put me at ease.
No.
Because there is information in this essay alone that as a Latter-day Saint, who what I would assume has at least some biblical morals,
right,
this is going to be troubling for them. And I hope it is. The church is trying to give the impression by saying, well, look at this situation or look at that situation, that somehow that's going to make it better. And they use expressions like if we had more information or information is limited, as if there might be something out there to make us feel better about this. I don't think so.
And they're using a lot of words like may or might or should, those kinds of words that are quite nebulous and are not very distinct or specific. And I think they're doing that on purpose, because to be more specific on some of these things would only dig a bigger hole for Joseph Smith.
And I think one of those areas in which you just mentioned about the vagueness about all this does not give the Mormon Church any wiggle room to say, absolutely, no, Joseph Smith did not have sex with all these women. Because mm-hmm. that's really the big issue. Did Joseph Smith have sex with these women, or did he not have sex with these women? So what we do have here is a confession by the LDS Church that at least in some cases, and we don't know exactly what all those cases are. We don't. But at least by their own admission, there were some cases. And if you're a Latter-day Saint and you're comfortable with Joseph Smith, your prophet, who is often described as being a holy and virtuous man, if you're okay with the fact that he had sexual relations with women other than his wife Emma, then this probably won't bother you.
If you're hearing this show for the first time, you can go on our website to hear the previous shows. We do have an on-air button on the very right-hand side, Viewpoint on Mormonism. Click there, and you can go to the podcast, and you can hear last week's shows. I think this might be one of those series, Bill, that maybe going back and hearing those other five before you continue on with us today would be beneficial to help give you the whole idea. Not only that, but we have written a response to this essay on plural marriage in Kirtland and Nauvoo. You can go to the MRM.org website. At the very top, you can see that link, and we have quoted the entire article. We've given you a link to that on the LDS.org website, but we've also responded. So not only the things that you and I are saying, Bill, but I've added in some other quotes to give fuller information.
We've recapped a bit about what we talked about last week, and so we're going to kind of backtrack a little bit and hit this section that says Joseph Smith and plural marriage. And we're just going to briefly hit some highlights of this because I think it's important to be reminded of what this essay says about what is a ceiling for time or eternity, because that's important to our discussion.
It says, during the era in which plural marriage was practiced, Latter-day Saints distinguished between ceilings for time and eternity and ceilings for eternity only. Ceilings for time and eternity included commitments and relationships during this life, generally including the possibility of sexual relations. Eternity-only ceilings indicated relationships in the next life alone. Evidence indicates that Joseph Smith participated in both types of ceilings. The exact number of women to whom he was sealed in his lifetime is unknown because the evidence is fragmentary. Some of the women who were sealed to Joseph Smith later testified that their marriages were for time and eternity, while others indicated their relationships were for eternity alone.
So instead of just coming out and telling you that, yes, Joseph Smith did have sexual relations with several wives outside of his relationship with his wife, Emma, They spent two paragraphs to tell you that, yep, that probably happened. There's no escaping that from what it says. Ceilings for time and eternity included commitments and relationships during this life, generally including the possibility of sexual relations. That statement alone tells us that the church cannot say definitively that Smith did not have sexual relations with other women besides Emma, especially when they say that some of the women who were sealed to Joseph Smith later testified that their marriages were for time and eternity. Well, if they were for time and eternity, and a time and eternity relationship generally included the possibility of sexual relations, then you have to say that was certainly a possibility. I think even most Mormon historians would admit that did happen. They're not denying that. Then it goes on to talk about Helen Mar Kimball. And we left you on Friday discussing Helen Mar Kimball, who was the daughter of Heber C. Kimball.
It continues, most of those sealed to Joseph Smith were between 20 and 40 years of age at the time of their sealing to him. The oldest, Fanny Young, was 56 years old. The youngest was Helen Mar Kimball, daughter of Joseph's close friends Heber C. and Violet Murray Kimball, who was sealed to Joseph several months before her 15th birthday.
Or in other words, she was 14, folks, because several months before your 15th birthday would make you 14. And I can understand by saying she was 14, that might really shock people. So what's the best thing they can possibly do? Well, she was just a few months away from being 15, as if that's going to make you feel better.
And then it goes on and says, marriage at such an age, inappropriate by today's standards, was legal in that era, and some women married in their mid-teens. Helen Mar Kimball spoke of her sealing to Joseph as being for eternity alone, suggesting that the relationship did not involve sexual relations. After Joseph's death, Helen remarried and became an articulate defender of him and of plural marriage.
Well, here we have Joseph Smith, who at this time would be what? In his 30s.
Yeah.
Correct? And he is trying to convince a 14-year-old that she should be his wife. Now, what do you do in the case, though, of Mary Elizabeth Rollins Leitner? According to Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith by Linda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery, they say this on page 100. Mary Elizabeth Rollins Leitner indicated that Joseph had first commented in 1831 that she would one day become his wife. Joseph approached her again in 1834, but afraid of the unusual arrangement, she married Adam Leitner on August 11, 1835. Now let's think about this. Leitner indicates that Joseph first commented in 1831 that she would one day become his wife.
And she's 13 years old?
She's about 13 years old. Joseph Smith is what, 26 about this time? He's born in 1805.
25 maybe.
Okay. His birthday's in December. So we have a 25-year-old man approaching probably a 13-year-old girl.
Oh my goodness. Now I have three daughters, Bill. I know you have a couple as well. That happens in my household and I find out about it as a dad. That person is going to pay a high price.
Wouldn't you think even a person in the 19th century would have a problem with that? I would think so.
A married man who's twice her age.
That's the point. Folks, Joseph Smith is a married man approaching a 13-year-old about marriage.
Unconscionable.
I would think so. But why is it most Latter-day Saints, if they were to hear that, they go, well, that's no big deal. He was the prophet of God. And there we have again that free pass that Joseph Smith gets from so many Latter-day Saints. I just recently wrote a Latter-day Saint about this, and I said, you don't have a problem with this?
Even though he's a prophet, don't they believe that it's a possibility that there are false prophets out there? Wolves in sheep's clothing, looking for those whom they may devour? How do we know Joseph Smith is not one of those?
Inappropriate by today's standards, that was legal in that era. Well, so what? If it was legal. There were a lot of things that were legal.
It was legal in the 1950s for the South to make African Americans sit in the back of the bus. Today, it's legal for women to abort their preborn babies. I mean, so just because something is legal does not make it moral or right.
Well, back then, slavery was legal.
Sure.
During that time period, slavery in the United States was also legal. So just because in this paper it says it may be inappropriate by today's standards and it was legal in that era doesn't necessarily make it okay. I don't think that that would be a real good reason to allow that, at least in my mind.
Yep.
Tomorrow, we're going to look again at this article on plural marriage in Kirtland and Nauvoo.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wanted to go to Israel but didn't have the right opportunity? Well, now's your chance. As MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson, along with Matt Slick, the founder of CARM.org, are leading a 14-day tour this February. This newly revamped trip will take us to such places as Caesarea, Nazareth, and Masada. In addition, archaeologist and filmmaker Joel Kramer will join the group for 3 days, taking us to such sites as Jericho, Jacob's Well, and Cave 1 in Qumran. There'll be short devotional messages everywhere we go, along with baptisms in the Jordan River and a communion service at the Garden Tomb. The price of this tour includes your international flights, 3- and 4-star hotels, 2 buffet meals a day, all admission fees, and even taxes and tips. You'll come back from this spectacular 14-day tour with a new zeal to read the Bible. The deadline for registration is December 15th. For more information, go to mrm.org and click on the Israel logo to the right side of the page, or write us at contact@mrm.org. We look forward to seeing you in the Holy Land.